Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life. And welcome to Idle Red Hands. I'm Chris.
I'm Wayne.
I'm Lyle. Lyle with the new mic. I've got a mic. New mic.
Is that like, you know, Frodo of the Nine Fingers, Lyle of the new mic?
I said Lyle with the, but not Lyle of the new mic.
All right, well, I guess the answer to that is no. All right.
That's joke. Really how I know you're slam. By your newest equipment.
Yeah, I'm not from the new mic.
Lyle of the new t-shirt.
How about Lyle of the new pants? When I had to take a photo of your pants.
Yeah, I went and had to go into the tailor, and we're testing some pants out. We're going with a medium break. So I had the full break, and that was just too long. Then I tried the short break, and that was just too short.
Maybe then I tried the medium break, and that was just right.
But we're not going to commit. We're going to try these tester pants.
Oh, jeez. Am I going to have to take more photos of them?
Well, I'm going to, like, take them and you got to walk around in them. The problem is the short break looked great in the shop, but then when I walked around in them, I was like, that's a bit, we're seeing a bit too much sock.
Yeah, I had to spend lunch with this guy, with him standing there, looking at his pants. Like, look at these pants, look at these pants. And then, like, about a half an hour later from coming back from lunch, I get an email. Boop, would you take a picture of my pants? I'm like, oh, dude, what the hell is this?
I think he was trying to seduce you, Wayne.
I think he was, too.
But... You really have to say what part of the pant I asked you to take a picture of.
All right, the bottom.
Yeah, okay, right. Not my bottom. Bottom of the pant.
Thanks for heading that joke off there, Lyle.
I don't recall seeing pictures of Lyle's pants on the agenda for this episode. So,
hey, you sort of like to talk about him, though, didn't you?
Well, you did bring it up.
I expected it to be, hey, I did take a picture of your pants. Yeah, that's weird. Moving on, not the whole story.
I can't tell whether to be interested or bored by that conversation.
All right.
Oh, I also had a testicular cancer scare this past week.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I went to three different doctors.
Got three different answers?
No. The first one's like,
you don't have cancer. Second one's, you do have cancer. Third guy's, maybe.
Actually, here, they'd probably all be, maybe.
If the first one says you don't have cancer, why would you go to another? I want another opinion. Are you sure? No, he's like, the ultrasound goes, you have some abnormal growth here. I'm like, oh, okay. Great. So then I went and got, like, an MRI and a CT. My first CT scan.
Congratulations.
And what I didn't realize is that they put like some sort of radioactive isotope in your body, so they'd give you an IV.
Mm-hmm.
And I had gotten a blood test just prior to that. Like, it was part of the series, like your urine test, blood test, CT, MRI.
Yeah.
So I thought the nurse said, where did you get the injection or the needle?
Mm-hmm.
What she was saying is, where do you want the injection?
Oh.
So I said, oh, my right arm. And then she rolls it off, and there's like a Band-Aid. And she's like, can I take the Band-Aid off? And I'm like, yeah, sure. And I'm like, I don't know, like somehow this interferes with the CT scan, maybe, I don't know. And she takes it off, and then bam, there goes an IV. Right where I had my blood test, I'm like, oh, dear God.
That's fantastic.
And then the guy, like, of course, you got an isotope going through, and I don't know what they call him, maybe a radiologist?
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, oh, you're going to get really hot. You know, with the isotope in you. Oh, does anything hurt? And I'm like, yeah, my arm. Could you have, like, done, like, final answer, your right arm? Yeah, oh, wait, my left arm. My left arm, please. And then I fell asleep in the MRI.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. Actually, I have a little bit of a book dilemma. So I've been...
Nothing to read?
Yeah, something to read. But I'm just finishing up one of those Horus Heresy books. No fear, or something like that. Oh, I probably should read the cover. So what should I read next? I've got like a Forgotten Realms fantasy book or Sword of Shannara. And the Forgotten Realms book's called The Ogre's Pact. And it starts with, for a millennium, men and giants have abided together in the snowy wilderness of the ice spires, all paying fealty to a single dynasty of human kings. Blah, blah, blah. Ogre Horde, kidnap somebody.
I think the fact you have to say blah, blah, blah kind of rules it out.
save the princess, uncover the secrets most jealously. Ooh, whoa.
Oh, whoa, back up that blah, blah, blah.
That's got a secret. And this one's like, Last of the Bloodline, Rest of the Hope of All Races, yada, yada, yada.
Adventure. Bada bing, bada boom.
And Adventure, Magic, and Myth.
Have you already read it, or have you read the other one, Sword of Shannara?
I read Sword of Shannara, like, years ago. Like, I don't know.
So if you're feeling nostalgic, go for that. If you want something new, go for the other.
Yeah,
if you
want something new, read a D&D book from, like, circa 1995.
Hey!
New to you.
Exactly. If you haven't read it yet, it's new to you.
So new.
Does it have Dritz in it?
No.
Then it's a bit higher on my list.
All right, well, just before New Year's Eve, we're going to do a New Year's wrap-up for our final episode of 2012. We're not necessarily going to be talking about the big stories, or the big gaming stories of the year, because, I mean, you already know what those are, D&D Next, Pathfinder MMO, and others. What we're going to talk about is the stories that we really liked, or liked to hate, and why we liked them or why we didn't like them, and then, of course, what we'd like to see in the upcoming year. So one story I really liked in 2012 was some of the old school revivals that came about, like Champions and RuneQuest.
So you're specifically talking about like titles that, you know, got, I guess, reincarnated or reprinted or given some kind of rejuvenation, as opposed to, say, like the OSR, where I don't know if any, you know, titles got reprinted, where it was just more, not a glut, but a bunch of new, quote-unquote, old-school products. You're talking about an actual, like, reprints or updates.
I was talking specifically, yeah, about the, like, the RuneQuest and the Champions releases of this year. And I think my hard copy should be, is en route now.
Oh, of Champions.
Yeah, of Champions. My brother got it for me, and he said he was going to mail it ASAP about, oh, I don't know, 3 weeks ago. So maybe it's in the mail.
Maybe.
Yeah, that one's really good for you, though. Hey, because you used to play Champions back in the day. It's got a good nostalgia factor, huh?
Oh, definitely. And I think it's one of those games where it hasn't actually been replaced by some of the stuff that's come up. Like that system, like the different mechanics. It is a very pure point buy, very easy. Well, not easy at all. Sorry.
It's quite famous for not being easy.
What am I talking about?
Deep.
Easy to understand why people moved on to other systems, but I mean, when you read it through, I mean the amount of customization that you can do is pretty staggering, and not being tied to any known universe, it's really open. Mm-hmm.
So you can actually sort of recreate superheroes from any what's the word I'm looking for brand, including your own.
Oh yeah. And then you have something like a RuneQuest when it comes out. And I wasn't a big RuneQuest player back in the day. But then when you had like a radical shift like D&D 4E, not necessarily saying a terrible shift, but just like a different shift, that it's a bit of a palate cleanser, a little like a shift back. And maybe that's why we saw some products like the Secret Fire that came out and we reviewed in an earlier episode.
Yeah.
Which kind of harkens back to first edition D&D.
Yeah, it's definitely something that I would be interested in getting my hands on, because we did that episode a while back on alternative fantasies, and I talked a bit about RuneQuest from what I remembered back in the day, but we got some feedback from a few different listeners, and there was a lot that I'd forgotten and even more that I'd missed on, so it's definitely something I would like to go back and look through again, if not actually play, of course.
Yeah, I'm wondering how, not how playable, but this one comes without a setting. You know, essentially. So.
Oh, that's right. I'd forgotten about that. They stripped Glorantha out of it, huh?
Yeah, it's not in there, and I haven't looked through the book enough to know if there is a setting in it. But I'm on the one hand, yeah, that's great because you can kind of make it your own setting. But on the other hand, I'm wondering, would it kind of feel like the old RuneQuest?
That's a good question, because the setting was one of the strongest points of RuneQuest. It's so such a detailed and exquisite world.
Yeah, I think, you take a risk when you make a product that doesn't have a setting attached to it. Mm. One thing, yeah, I mean, people can't get excited about rules. Well, some people can, but
right.
A lot of people need something to hang on to, even if they're going to deviate from it. Mm-hmm. And just something to kind of, like, ground everything. So, yeah, it is, I mean, that cover art's amazing, and you're like, wow, you know,
right.
like a kind of a Greek warrior woman, and you kind of see some of the interior art plays on that, but you don't really get anything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I like what you said about, like, sometimes it's really hard to hang mechanics on something when there's no fiction. Because, in my opinion, kind of the mechanics of a game are there in large part to simulate the reality of the game world. That's kind of what they're there to do. And so not having a game world, I don't really know what the rules are trying to simulate. I mean, there's still some basic reality things, but especially in fantasy setting, you kind of, in my opinion, you kind of need something to explain fictionally why the rules do what they do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think a game like Pathfinder or D&D, it's slightly more forgiving in that it does follow a fairly standard fantasy setting.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But also, it's D&D, and Pathfinder is an extension of D&D. So we already know what all the settings are, or most people do.
Yeah.
Whereas
go ahead, Lon.
Yeah, RuneQuest, people are less familiar with what the setting is, and so they might need more of a grounding.
Yeah, very true. As a slight addition to your list there, also it's good to mention Fate, how Fate Core is being rewritten and re-released. No, not re-released, I suppose. The newest version is being released through Kickstarter, but it is an older system that's hopefully going to get some new life breathed into it.
Does that count as old school? Oh, okay.
Well, the first edition of Fate is, I suppose it's not nearly as old as RuneQuest or Champions, but it's from a while back.
Yeah, I suppose, well, you do mention Kickstarter, and that's another big story of the year, and probably going to be a big story in the upcoming years, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And one that we got a little bit involved in this year with the emergent science fiction fantasy RPG.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad you brought that up, Locke, because that was on my list as one of the big stories, even though it was kind of, you know, on a much more personal scale, was we got our first interview with the Emergence team, and I thought that was really fun, and I'm really happy that we did that.
Yeah, it was a blast. They were cool folks, too.
Yeah, of course, I'm even more... It may sound selfish, but I'm kind of relieved that the Kickstarter made it. So, happy for them, and relieved for us, because, I don't know, that kind of would have sucked if the first interview we do was a failed Kickstarter project, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's dramatic, too. It was right down to the wire whether they're going to make it or not.
Yeah. Well, I'm really happy we did that. I'm glad we got that experience under our belt, and I'm really hoping that 2013 we'll be able to get several more interviews. So,
foreshadowing.
It's not if you to go foreshadowing real big like that.
Well, he didn't have the music to play.
Da, da, da. I can find it. We all know I love those sound effects.
This is true. I wonder if we have one possibly in the works. Bum, bum, bum.
Ba-dum, bum. Wait, song, you're wrong sound effect.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things for me that kind of stood out this year was some really interesting, new, and surprising systems that we got to try. And the one specifically that I was really impressed by was the Marvel role-playing game and Monster Hearts. And it was actually the very end of 2011, but Cosmic Patrol I put into there as well. But the Marvel game was the first time that I've tried the kind of the Margaret Weiss rule set. It's where you build a dice pool based on the powers that you're using as far as superhero powers from Marvel, but also the situation that you're in, whether you're by yourself or with other people. And it's something I haven't really seen before, but it's a really interesting way of putting a dice pool together that's not just based on your skills, the skills on your character sheet. So that was really cool.
I believe that system is called Cortex Plus now.
Ah, right you are. Thank you.
Sorry, I didn't mean to stop you cold like that.
Oh, no, sorry. I assumed you guys were going to say more about Marvel. Let's see. The other one was trying out the Apocalypse World system, specifically with the game Monster Hearts, which, well, actually, I went on and on about it last episode, but it's based off of a system where you roll two dice, and if you get you roll 2d6s, and if you get a 6 or under, then you fail, and the storyteller, the game master, gives some kind of a difficult situation for your character. Between a 7 to 9, you succeed, but there's some kind of twist that makes it a difficult choice for your character. And if you get 10+, then you succeed in what you're trying to do. And it's probably one of the most narrative systems that I've ever tried before. And it was really fun and interesting to see where the game went. And Monster Hearts specifically, of the different types of this rule set that we played, was just a fantastic game.
I'm actually going to jump in there and nitpick a tiny bit, sorry. Because okay. A six or less isn't a fail. And I've had this discussion with people on the other forums. A six or less is a miss. And a miss is just game speak for telling the GM to do something, you know, further their own agenda. So it's not a miss in like a D&D or a Pathfinder sense, because the player or the character could still get what they want. Like, you know, they could still be successful at their task, but the GM could make the consequences of that like so terrible that things are much worse off than they were before they attempted that thing.
Yeah, no. Yeah, you're right. Consider my nitpicked.
Yeah.
And the last one was a Cosmic Patrol, which was, it was a really simplistic gaming system, but it was kind of a where we did a round robin GMing style of the night. You can check out the episode, just do a search on the website for it. But the thing that really stood out for me on that was that in the game, whenever you failed on the dice, because there wasn't kind of a solid GMship, you got to narrate what happened next, despite it being a failure. And for me, that was, it's such a, something I'd never thought of before, but it really opened my eyes to a different way of GMing a game, to where allow the player to describe how they fail. And so it's been a lot of fun to play with that. So, yeah, this year was kind of me breaking out of the kind of the more traditional World of Darkness and D&D kind of, you know, take a turn, roll the dice, DM describes what happens, wash, rinse, repeat, into some more narrative-style games, and it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, so it sounds like 2012 was the year of the narrative game for you.
Yeah, yeah, and I hope it continues this way, because I'm absolutely loving it.
I kind of disagree with the World of Darkness being lumped in.
Well, it's not. Of course, they're completely different systems, but the basic pattern of play is the same. You know, everybody has a turn. A turn is a set amount of time. The DM describes the situation and makes the call on what happens in the world, and the players react to that with either their narrative or their dice rolls. Whereas these narrative games, the players have a much larger hand in building the world around and describing what happens, rather than getting it from the GM. At least that's kind of the division that I'm making there. But, I mean, of course, you could separate on other lines.
I do kind of see that division, and I agree with it a little bit. Like, in my opinion, if you were going to take those three games, like Marvel Heroic Role-Playing Game, like one of the Apocalypse World games, and then Cosmic Patrol, I would say Marvel Heroic is sort of closest to a traditional game, because there is still a GM, and, you know, they do still do things with their NPCs, but there's a lot more narrative freedom that the players can bring in with their distinctions and stunts and things like that. So, yeah, it is a bit more narrative where, yeah, Cosmic Patrol, because the GM rotates essentially from, like, chapter to chapter or scene to scene, again, it's a kind of more somewhat traditional in that, you know, there is one GM, but it completely changes, and so you don't really know where your scene's gonna go when you start it, because you have no idea where the GM before you left off. So I thought that was pretty fun. You know, You really do have to fly by the seat of your pants on that one.
Yeah,
I don't mind like the narrative games, and it's nice to see like them. I guess more variety there, but I think there is a lot of hype to these games, and that they're not necessarily as avant-garde as people might like to believe. But like I would say, Cosmic Patrol is truly a different style of game with the rotating game master. But the actual gameplay itself is fairly comparable to a standard role playing game.
Right.
I didn't find Fate all that. Just because I could say that there, you know, that there's now tall grass,
and then lose it the next time you win.
Yeah, and then if I don't keep that aspect, I mean, that's a very mechanical way of doing it. So. I think a lot of the things, I mean, maybe I took issue with the World of Darkness in that I just find players are more proactive in that particular system. Maybe it's more of a setting thing, though.
Right.
Is where players are going, okay, I'm going to do this now, because you're not in a dungeon.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So players will say, all right, now I want to do this. This is part of my agenda. So they are contributing a lot to the story. Mm-hmm. Whereas saying whether or not you have tall grass or the door is locked or unlocked because you've applied a particular mechanic, I don't necessarily see that as a tremendous storytelling addition.
Well, don't get me wrong. I don't want to say that one is better than the other, because the Tom and Yujiro, who I play with kind of in minigames after work because they live right next to me, like they both love the more tactical mechanic games. They love things that have grids in them for movement and whatnot. So, I mean, it's all by a different choice. But I think the big thing to take away is that there were just a lot of new and different kinds of mechanics and from a lot of narrative games that I got introduced to this year that I think just opened my eyes to different ways of playing a game. And there's great ways to mix them together. You know, if you're used to a game that's kind of more strict and solid, like World of Darkness or D&D, but let yourself open up, be free, you know, allow the players to create the world around them and to have more control of the stories. I just learned, I think, to be a better DM through experiencing more systems that had different kinds of mechanics. And those three, specifically, Marvel role-playing game, Monster Hearts, and Cosmic Patrols, are things that I think anyone could benefit from taking a look at.
I'm not disagreeing, but I guess maybe I'm taking issue with the way you're characterizing or presenting the other game, like D&D and World of Darkness. So you're like as straight and almost like a railroad or whatever. I mean, to be honest, like I really enjoyed Marvel Heroic role-playing, and it is on certainly my list of some of the better stories. But as far as mechanics goes, I think maybe Lost Days of Memories of Madness. Was something where we talked about it a little bit in a previous episode. It's about like elves and sharing dreams and things like that, or memories.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that was a bit like, wow, that truly is like a really different style of game, and the players kind of just bid for stuff and that. And I found that a real dramatic shift. I did not find that in playing Fate or other games like that, or the Apocalypse World, and I felt that they were variations of a regular role-playing game. But certainly, yeah, the mechanics can add to your arsenal.
I'm actually glad you brought that one up, Lyle, because now that you've mentioned it, I've described it, or tried to describe it to you guys before, but that Lost Days of Memories and Madness, that is kind of how I imagine Fiasco playing a little bit, that kind of storytelling game that I got that we haven't had a chance to play yet. It's a lot more just kind of pure role-playing with almost no dice mechanics in it.
Yeah, no, I think if once you start making, like, a character that is pretty similar, and, yeah, you have dice and things like that, then, yeah, you're going to be playing kind of, like, same kind of game. Oh, wow, I'm just, like, boiled all games down into one.
So you have a character, and you play a role-playing game. Yeah.
Anyway, maybe what I'm trying to say is if you're kind of running like pretty standard World of Darkness games, maybe the problem isn't the system, it's you. Sorry.
Oh.
Wow.
Hard truths for the end of 2012. It's not the game. It's your players who suck. Yeah.
Games don't kill fun. You kill the fun.
I like that coming up on your Facebook wall, jeez.
But since we talked about it, yeah, Marvel Heroic role-playing, yeah, you know, a tremendous addition to kind of anyone's gaming library, and certainly mine. And just kind of the broader news, I thought, was that just some of the really nice licensed products that came out this year.
Right.
And it's almost as if, you know, you're going to spend all that money on a licensed product, and the game company's like, well, we're really going to make sure that they're going to do it right. Mm-hmm. And I think a couple of games that really did it right were Marvel Heroic Role-Playing for, what, the fourth time? And Star Wars X-Wing.
Okay.
And I thought, like, the systems that they developed for both those games, I think, really draw you into that world. And they do a really good service. And it's, yeah, with the dice pools and the, you know, the Doom pool and things like that that were in the Marvel Heroic Role-Playing, it's a slightly different dice mechanic, not like a... it's more in line with the kind of the World of Darkness school of games with their dice pools than it is with the, we'll say, like the D&D or Palladium style with, you know, kind of the 1d20.
Right.
And the other dice are used for damage, so.
Right.
And I just, yeah, just the openness of that system, and, like, it's almost like, I hesitate, it just doesn't not that it doesn't care, but it kind of like captures the, you know, in the comics, fights are pretty crazy. Like people get thrown through the wall and then get back up, even though they don't, you know, they're supposed to be relatively normal person.
Or they get taken out by carnage right in the first scene by emotional trauma.
Yeah, I mean, just the fact that it is so like, I mean, you read a comic book, yeah, and the guy's like going toe to toe with the Hulk in one issue, and then you know he's got to like be taken out by, you know, like the Punisher in the next or something like that, just because that's, you know, you got to tell these different stories and, you know, kind of those type of swings I think the game has. So it was a lot of fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Star Wars X-Wing is a lot of fun. That movement.
Yeah, as you said before, that movement makes the game.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of fun. Sorry, what can I say? Actually, I I knew you were going to be talking about it tonight, I did download a copy of the rulebook from the Final Fantasy Flight Games website and read through it. It does look very interesting. Yeah, I still want to play.
Yeah, it's kind of surprising. Like, I looked through the rulebook, and we brought this up before, but I almost didn't need it. Like, reading the rulebook actually got me a little bit more confused, where the game is pretty much really straightforward and really simple, where you could just watch it and then play, and then only refer to the rules manual when, like, a question comes up.
And despite Lyle saying that we're probably not going to talk about it, I'm going to talk about D&D next. For me, this is one of the big stories of the year. You know, it's no secret that I'm just a big fanboy of D&D, so next coming out was really exciting, and I like the new rules. They played well. I haven't tried the latest iteration with the skill die in it, but the last one before that, we play tested, and yeah, it was fun, nice, felt like D&D, so I'm very happy. Cue hatred, Wayne.
Yeah, all right, thanks. Like, honestly, the system isn't that bad, but what made this like a huge story in like the negative column for me was the constant polling and updates and the are we doing a good job asking for a pat on the head pandering feeling I got from Wizards of the Coast and the D&D Next team. That really kind of turned me off to the game, because it seemed like, you know, I followed all the updates, I downloaded all the packets, and I looked at all the changes, and like even from reading through the changes, just like, you know, the first day I got them, I could see issues, not problems, but just like issues where players could break the rules or where things would look weird. And I got the feeling that they didn't play test anything in house, you know, because it seemed like they weren't, I don't know, addressing things. And then the very next, you know, play test would come out and they're like, oh, here are these other changes we've made and here are these new things. And it felt like they're just kind of throwing spaghetti at the wall, seeing what sticks, and they don't really have a clear plan for it. So I don't know. I'm kind of disappointed.
Yeah, that was one of my news stories. Like the broader story is, I remember when game companies released finished product, and yeah, the beta versions, and like, yeah, we're gonna have a play test, and everybody's really excited about that. But the huge downside is you're getting a lot of like unfinished rules, and yeah, it's just, and it's not like a limited play test group, so. Are you necessarily going to get the best product out of this? Like, do the greatest games come out of a democracy? I don't know. We'll see in the coming years, but...
Right.
That was far more restrained than I was expecting.
What do you mean? But, oh, it sucks! Table flip!
Well, no, like, that thing I was talking about with... I wanted to talk about with Dice was based on the conversation we had before about it. How you're saying how random the D20 is.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, that's not D&D Next's fault. It is their fault that they choose to use a D20, but they're kind of locked into that because, quote, that's D&D, end quote.
Well, the thing is that like, it's not really that random, dude.
No, it's not, but I'm not saying it's not random. I'm saying everything has an even chance of coming up. Well, yeah, this came up because, the as you said, Chris, the latest playtest change is train skills don't give you a static bonus to your die roll. Instead, you get to roll an additional die. So, you know, so you'd be rolling a D20... and then you'd get to roll like a D4 or D6 or D8 and, you know, add it to your total. And I don't know, I'm really not impressed with that, despite other systems doing something similar, kind of like Savage Worlds or Marvel Heroic Roleplaying, because I just see it as, another way, or yeah, kind of like another way that you can't rely on your skills in D&D. And I kind of have this problem with the D20 roll. You know, everything has a 5% chance. Every number is a 5% chance of coming up. And I don't like that swinginess. And from my perspective, rolling another die just adds another element of swinginess, you know? Like, you're rolling a D20 and your skill die is a D8. Well, they could both roll ones, you know? Whereas if you had a static bonus, you at least would have done marginally better. So, and I will have to play it, but at first blush, I don't like that at all.
And I'm just saying the dice pool system is far swingier, if that's a word. Like in the email that we're talking about, like you, Wayne referenced that he much prefers a dice pool system like Ubiquity or World of Darkness, because of it has less randomality. But I'm trying to say that that's not true.
Okay, no, I'm getting it. I think if you have fun with it, then it's all right.
Look at you, the mediator. Yeah. All right. How about this? I do not have fun with that D20 and skill die.
That's too bad.
I have a lot of fun with the dice pool, and it's not necessarily because of probability. So I'm not weighing in on that debate. Whoa.
Ain't touching that one.
Yeah. That's all you guys.
Just when I got out, they dragged me back in.
It's just I really love the flexibility and the mixing and matching that you can do. Just attribute. Or ability plus skill, and I really like that. And it makes it very easy for me as a game master or a storyteller, if you want to use their word, for when a player is like, what do I need to roll? And you're just like, oh, I just kind of match things. What do you have? You know, can you justify it?
Right.
And I found that a much more flexible system in that regard than some other systems out there, like D&D. But I suppose like a DM could say, well, that's insight. Yeah, that's good enough for this. That's fine.
Yeah.
It's not as much fun.
That's very true. I totally agree with that point. You're right. But I feel like...
Well, then put a period on that sentence. Not a conjunction.
Right. Okay, I will finish there. You are right as well.
Go ahead. I'm just joking.
No, I was going to say, I think you're right about, yeah, okay, if you play in a D20 system, you're a police officer, then you're going to get some kind of bonus to invest to, you know, search checks if you're using, you know, police procedures. I think the difference is the fiction it creates, you know? You, in the World of Darkness, or in one of those mix and match skill-based systems, you say, I am this type of character, which means I have these type of skills, which kind of informs you, the player, as to what type of actions your character should take to get the results you want. Where, like, it's one of those things where the mechanics, because the mechanics of, like, a D20 system are the same, you roll a D20, and then you add a bonus. And I'm not saying that the mechanics for World of Darkness are different because you still just roll a bunch of dice and count successes. I don't know. I think it's that little bit of fiction that makes it different enough that it feels like you're doing something different. And I use different a lot. Wow.
I can't argue with that. That's just how you feel about the game, so. Woot.
Okay. No, that's a good point, Wayne. Thanks.
Butchered it, but...
No, it's kind of like probably the point I was butchering earlier on about the narrative game. And that, well, you know, calling something a narrative game, people like are expecting that, oh man, I'm really going to contribute to the story now because it's a narrative game, when you can actually sit down with just about any game
right,
and say, everybody you all can contribute to the story. Yeah, but no. Just everybody just can contribute to the story.
And I think that's a really valid point that kind of rises above the rest of all of the things that we've been bickering about here, is that really there's, even in a game like 4th edition D&D, where it's almost entirely built around the mechanics of combat, there's still nothing holding you back from having a good role-playing experience. It's just how you play, which is a point that you brought up many times before, Lyle.
No, yeah, I guess what when we talked about it earlier, is like, yeah, we've mentioned a couple times, it's one of the reasons why one of the reasons why games are so heavy in the combat mechanics is that's when, you know, people are going to most likely complain about something being fair or unfair.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So you do need all of those rules just to kind of prevent that. But we, a lot of times, like, talking to somebody, I mean, people are going to be more freeform, so you don't need as many rules, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I think that's, I want a game that has a better social mechanic to it. And I know it sounds so dumb that I want to add more mechanics to role-playing, but I would like there to be something a little bit crunchier to it to better represent characters that might have abilities that I don't have in a role-playing setting. And that's one of the reasons that I do want to give the social combat in A Song of Ice and Fire a try, because it has a similar aspect mechanic to Fate, where you can apply different words and situations and feelings onto the conversation that you're having, and that'll affect the outcome of what the NPCs do. And it's based on the character's stats and abilities rather than what you're just able to come with at the table.
Right. Well, like, I don't disagree with you about, you know, adding or liking to have a bit more mechanics to social combat, I'll call it, because that is a benchmark usually of how I judge a system, like how they handle social stuff. And if they just kind of say, oh, do whatever you want, well, then I'm not all that impressed. But I think just as a first step, a way of making social interactions more meaningful is to give them the same weight as combat. You know, as Lyle said, and I've thought the same thing, the reason why combat usually has so many mechanics is because that's when players are really going to say, I need to know what happens to my character because this is dangerous.
Yeah.
So as a GM, I would say apply that same mentality to social interactions. You know, it's not going to result in the character dying, but maybe it's going to result in, yeah, you said something really dumb and now that guy doesn't like you. So no matter what you say, you are not going to get information from this guy. Sorry, go find another way to solve this problem. Or, you know, you said something fantastic and now this person thinks you are way better than you actually are. And they're going to ask you to do all this stuff. And it's going to matter. So even without adding mechanics, give those social interactions the weight and the gravity that a combat situation would have. Make it meaningful. And even though you call it a failed experiment, Lyle, I think that's why your real-time vampire experiment was so successful, and we remember it so well, is because everything we said had a consequence, and there was no take-backs, and there was no hand-waving of, oh, yeah, well, you didn't really mean to say that, so we'll just pretend you didn't. So.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny, and this is kind of a little bit of a shift, but it reminds me of something you were saying the other day, Wayne, when you're looking at the old school modules of D&D.
Right.
Saying everything is save versus death.
Yeah.
Open the door, save versus death. and you were saying that, and on the one hand, you think that's unfair, and, you know, we've kind of shifted in the games, like, everybody's got to be relatively equal in power and ability and contribution to the party. No one can really die in that, but, you know, save versus death is, like, totally BS in a sense, but it also makes everything kind of matter a little bit.
Right.
Yeah, because there's no take-backs. You can't, like, open the door. Save versus death. Fail. You're dead.
Oh. Oh, come on, but you're dead.
There's no, like, well, I'll go back to that save point. No, you're dead. We'll try to work a new character in, but that one's dead.
Yeah, like, I was in another Twitter argument again where I had complained that the new rogue, like, ability in D&D Next, it was called Assassinate. Yet all it did on a successful hit was double the amount of damage it did. And I'm like, well, all right, that's not really assassinating the target. That's just doing a boatload of damage. Like, it may one-shot something that's a low level. But, well, you know, they should change the name. And that led to a whole discussion of, okay, should monsters be able to, like, auto-kill a player? And my standpoint is, yes, they should, because that makes it dangerous. And other people were saying, oh, no, you know, that's not fair, blah, blah, blah. You know, you have to kind of, you know, you shouldn't kill player characters. And that's a little different for me than save versus death, where the characters got into that fight. They could have avoided it. Plus, if they're smart, they would have done some research into what they're going up against. Oh, hey, we're fighting a Medusa? Better get a mirrored shield. You know, or, oh, we're fighting this, you know, incredibly poisonous thing. Well, then we better have some anti-venom on hand. And if they don't choose to do that, then it's kind of their own dang fault. And, yeah, then monsters should be able to one-shot them. It's like, oh, well, next time let's prepare. But And I have a bit more of a problem with the just kick open the door and, oh, hey, there's a Medusa right there, save versus death, you know, without any kind of warning. Yeah, it does make things feel real and dangerous, and that is kind of a type of game, but those old school modules I was looking at did get a little ridiculous, where it was like, hey, every door is save versus death, essentially. Every encounter is, oh, well, if you do something wrong or fail a die roll, you're going to die. And when it was used like that, it just got kind of ridiculous. Rather than being exciting, it seemed like it would be tedious. Like, oh, all right.
Yeah, I think there's room for a happy medium there. There's, like, the games, the kind of the original games, like, say, first edition D&D, were more like a game, almost like a board game, where you go in and the object is to get through this dungeon alive. It wasn't really stretching into a long campaign, and that's what the game has evolved into now. And, you know, losing a character every session is not something that's very conducive towards that type of game, which is just kind of what's more popular, though, of course, there is a resurgence in old school games of late. But I totally agree, Wayne. There definitely should be some situations that are just so dangerous that getting into them will cause death. But also, I think that maybe they should be broadcast a little bit as well, just to kind of bring more fairness into the game.
Well, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, like Warhammer Fantasy Battle. And you have those, like, some of the undead whites, and they would get, like, the killing blow. And it's like, if they do that one hit, you're dead.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's known, you know, it is known.
Yep.
So if you tussle with them, then that's
on
what
you.
You're gonna face. Yeah, it's on you. That's what you face. And imagine just like how scary that would be. Mm-hmm. You know, if they get like a certain role, you're dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just like when we played in our 4E game, when you guys went up against the Medusa, and all the Medusa ended up doing was paralyzing Wayne's character for a temporary time.
Right.
And, yeah, I mean, even I was just like, yeah, that sucks. That's not what Medusas do.
I thought you had done something where you actually kind of, like, lessened its power. Or did you use it straight from the book?
I don't remember now.
Because I remember, like, I think Lyle said it too, like, after that encounter, we're like, that was kind of a letdown. And it would have been a lot scarier, a lot better if someone actually had gotten turned to stone. Because then it's like, oh, what are we going to do now? So even if it was my character, like, I wouldn't have minded. I'd have been like, oh, all right, something has to happen.
Yeah, I don't remember. I do remember feeling disappointed with the monster, though, the way it works. So. But anyway, yeah.
All right, well, that ends our New Year's wrap-up, which apparently involved a lot of fighting, which actually probably... which actually did happen a lot over the year, off mic.
So imagine...
We get along a lot worse than we do online.
Yeah, imagine the whole year of our fighting is compressed in that one little segment. There you go.
White-hot ball.
Yeah, and I got to see well every day at work.
We don't even talk anymore.
I know.
Just take pictures of each other's pants.
Oh, you should hear all the outtakes when we're not, live on the mic. I hate you. All right.
Also, as an announcement, since we're all married to Japanese people and the New Year's is a big Japanese holiday, we're all off spending time with family for the New Year's. So there won't be an episode next week, but please join us again the following week, where we'll have something brand new and shiny for all of you. Is that going to be the 100th?
No, this is 98.
This is 98.
Yep.
Yeah. Ah, so 99 will be, I think we're going to try out something new for that.
Okay. And we'll be trying out something new for that episode. So hope to see you then. Anyway, check us out online at www.idleradhands.com, idleredhands.com. You can listen to the episode right there on the website, or download it through off of DriveThruRPG, or stream it through iTunes or Stitcher. You can post comments right there on the website for us, so you can join up in our forums and have conversations there. There's always a lot of fun stuff happening. Or you can follow us on Facebook or on Twitter, or just send us an email, because we love from hearing from all of you. Thanks a lot, and Happy New Year. See you next time.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Bye.
Bye.
Drive-Thru RPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week. And we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. Drive-Thru RPG. The one true source for RPGs. We'll be right back.
Idle Red Hands, recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.
I agree that you're right that it has more flexibility as far as mixing and matching stuff, but I find that there's also the limitation where it, because it uses mixing and maxing, and I'm talking about the World of Darkness specifically, is that a lot of times players ask that for every role, so what should I use here? It's, instead of just kind of, I'm searching a room so I know just I'll roll this search skill, they have to wonder which ones and often go to the storyteller for advice or a decision on that.
Well,
but, you know, we've had this discussion before, so it's probably not worth going into again.
Yeah, fair enough. I was just going to say my response as a storyteller would be, well, tell me what you're doing.
No, but also my response is that it's actually pretty clear what you should roll when you're doing certain things like that. It's not like it's a mystery that there's nothing that relates to cert on your character sheet.
Okay, perception. Notice that was the one that was always difficult. Every time we tried rolling a perception roll, we had to ask what it was.
That's because what you were doing is taking one terminology from one game, and then you weren't adopting the World of Darkness. Again, maybe it was you.
That would be the case if everyone else wasn't asking.
Oh my God!
I think perception was written on the sheet, Chris. All you had to do was look at it and say, "Oh, hey, there it is."
Yeah, I'm looking at this. Like, how is this difficult?
Well, okay.
What'd you do? Crack open the World of Darkness book?
Pause and look up the World of Darkness.
Don't actually pause anything.
Intelligence, wit.
Intelligence plus wits. That's the other one.
Yeah, so where are you? It's like, well, intelligence, but, you know, plus streetwise. Oh, good enough. Survival. There you go.
Yeah.
Investigation.
Absolutely.
Hello.
Oh, absolutely. Right. When I walk into a room and I'm trying to see what's there, I always think, what does my intelligence and my wits tell me?
Well, perception was an intelligence. Perception was wit and something else.
Oh, how about
I just said intelligence plus wit.
No. I said intelligence and wit. And wit.
That's what I said too, and Wayne said that's not it.
No, it's not plus wits. It's and wit.
And wits?
They are two different attributes that
they're
you can
two different
use.
Yeah. They're two different traits, and Lyle's saying, if you want to search something, you're going to use either a skill plus wits or a skill plus intelligence based on what you're doing.
I see.
And it's like investigation. I'm going to investigate the room. How about investigation? How about that?
That sounds great.
How about that one?
Wow, fantastic. Which investigation?
The one called investigation. I'd like to investigate this occult thing. How about occult? How about you roll that?
I'm going to need a minute here.
Take your time.
I want to drive a car. What should I use? Drive.
Oh, God.
Do drive. Please. Plus stamina? No, not unless you just want to crash the car.
Where is perception? I'm not seeing it on the...
It's
on
not
the
on there. It's...
What Wayne just said it was a few minutes ago.
And then I was wrong.
And he was wrong.
Oh, what do you know? Thanks.
Hey, I never claimed...
Jackass!